It's time for Caffeinated Comics, a lively discussion and debate on comics, film, television, and collectibles, all fueled by the magic of Frappuccinos. Caffeinated Comics is sponsored by Chimeras Comics. Chimeras is your one stop for comic books, graphic novels, hero clicks, Magic the Gathering, and more. Explore the fantastic at Chimeras Comics. And now, here's your hosts, John and Steven.
Thank you. This is Caffeinated Comics. I'm your host, John Clark. We got a Skype call again. Talk to Bill Monroe. As you know, Bill lives out in Seattle and calls in every couple of months or so. Well, he visited the Seattle Geekly podcast this week, and they are a local legend. They've been doing it for years. They do a fantastic job, and Bill's been a fan of them for a long time. So he contacted them and just wanted to see if they wanted to do a podcast crossover. If you listen to the Seattle Geekly podcast this week, you'll hear Bill on there. And they'll interview him, and hopefully he'll say some nice things about our show. And he got a chance to talk to them for a half an hour and get an exclusive interview, which you'll hear on this episode. But first, as you guys probably know by now, Weird Al has won the internet. Other than San Diego, which we'll cover next week, it has been the one big geek news story. Bill is the biggest Weird Al fan I know. He's seen him twice live, which we'll talk about. I was a big Weird Al fan, and I went through a period where I thought I was a little too cool for him. I thought he wasn't hip or edgy enough, and kind of forgot about him for a little bit. Every now and then he'd have a hit and come back. But this thing he did with these 8 videos in 8 days on different major internet networks has paid off huge. It's combined the forward thinking of the internet with what Al always does, which is just pure family-friendly comedy. And I wanted to get Bill's take on it right away. So we start talking about that, and then we'll talk to Seattle Geekly. Just talking about Weird Al.
And it's fantastic.
It is.
I mean, he has got the number one record
of music, not number one comedy record.
No, of music, of topic. He is, when we were growing up, this is what superstars like Madonna and Springsteen were doing. And while they're not making nearly as much music anymore, Weird Al still is, and he is number one. He is outselling this guy we were listening to when we were kids. He is outselling all of the artists that the teenagers today are buying and listening to, and that makes me so happy.
He is outselling the songs that he is parodying.
Exactly.
More people are downloading Word Crimes than Blurred Lines.
he is right now. He is bigger than any of these, any of the other folks who are recording stuff today. He is bigger than Lord. He is bigger than Robin Thicke. He is bigger than. than Pharrell. He is bigger than all of these folks. He is, it's just incredible, and it is awesome.
And it's well deserved. It really is.
It's not sloppy. He has worked on this, and that's the thing. Everything he does, I mean, one of the things that Weird Al hasn't made the big splash in YouTube and in social media in the way that, you know, some newer performers have, you know, because a lot of what we see today in social media is stuff that's good enough and it's clever and it hits it and it's fast and it's there. Weird Al is deliberate and planned and is still building for the album era, where it can take a couple of years to put out an album, but when he does, I mean, he hits it.
Yeah, although he said in interviews that this might be his last album, and now he's thinking when there's a hit song and he has an idea, he's just going to do that one song and then get it out.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, that's going to be really interesting to see what happens. But even so, I don't think we'll be seeing him do 100 songs in 100 days.
No, but you know what? We saw him do 8 videos in a week, and I think that's what put it over the top. Not so much the fact that they were 8 great songs, and they were. I think this is one of his strongest albums ever. And they were great videos. But the fact that he did this media blitz is what really grabbed the headlines. And what I thought
he really built the event, and those videos were all very different. I mean, the style you see in Tacky versus the style you see in Mission Statement versus the style you see in Foil, they're all so different.
They're so different, and they each play to the strengths of the website he hosted them on. He chose those websites very, very carefully. Like, you can tell Tacky is a Nerdist production, and and Foil is Funny or Die. Just look at the styles of them.
Right.
Very you know, so he is playing to the audiences of each one of those websites.
You know, and he's playing to, and it's not only playing to the audience of these websites, he's playing to the owners of these websites who were listening to Weird Al and who were forming a lot of their comedy leanings when they were kids, back in the days of Dare to Be Stupid and 3D.
Oh yeah, I got 3D. 3D was the first cassette I got on my birthday when I got my first cassette Walkman. that's where I go back with Weird Al. And 3D's like his second album.
Yep.
But but I also love just how true he's been to himself, because he's had this career for 30 years now where it's like every 5-6 years he gets a big hit. And then it's not all, he doesn't always have a big hit on every album, and it's like when he's not hitting, it's like, yeah, he's kind of corny, he's kind of hokey. You know, he's not, cuz he's not edgy. He's not edgy and he's not hip, but he plays up his dorkiness. That when the time is right for him and the song is right for him, then the sincerity he has just explodes, which is what's going on now.
Right, right. I think we really started to see. I mean, the new, you know, as preposterous as it is to say, the new Weird Al Renaissance really goes back to Straight Outta Linwood with White and Nerdy. You talk about owning who you are.
Yeah, that was huge. That was the first time I had heard a Weird Al song without knowing what the song was parodying.
Right.
Like, I had not heard Ridin' ever.
Right, exactly.
When I heard that. And that's when when that song came out, I was thinking, oh, I don't know how much longer Weird Al can do this, because there's top 40 radio is so fractured that it's hard to pick out the Beat It or the Give It Away or the Gangster's Paradise. Like, it's hard to find that song that's so ubiquitous in pop culture that, right, like, it's kind of scattershot. Like, oh, this song is kind of big for a week. But damn it if he didn't do it on this album, because I was watching the videos and Ben was watching them with me. Uh-huh. And I had to explain, like, with some of the older songs, I was listening to Yoda. And he got the jokes, but he didn't know what the Kinks song was, and he didn't know why that was funny.
Right.
And or like Eat It, he didn't quite get it. And I'm explaining, well, you know, he takes a real song and then he changes the word and he puts jokes in instead of the words. And then we were watching the videos, and Ben knew every one of those songs.
Right.
Because, let's face it, we're old. And he's a kid that, like, top 40 is closer to him than it is to us.
Right.
So, like, something like Fancy, I had never heard it. Uh-huh. And he's like, oh, I know this, and he's humming it the first time we saw that video.
Uh-huh.
So,
well, I think the other thing that's key about this is a lot of people perceive Weird Al as just the person who parodies other songs. But one of the things that Weird Al's strength has really been that, you know, for every Eat It or Fat that makes it big on top 40 because it is the parody. You've also got, you know, a One More Minute or
I Love That Song So Much.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny, both Nature Trail to Hell and One More Minute came up on my way home today on random. But you know what? I will say in this batch of videos, the Pixies riff, First World Problems, was maybe the smartest song.
Mm-hmm.
Every joke in that worked for me.
Right.
And that was one of those I think what he calls them, like, tone parodies. Like, it wasn't Where Is My Mind or Gigantic, but it's totally the Pixies.
Exactly. And Mission Statement, totally CSN.
Yeah. And you know what's funny? There was one I bought the album over the weekend. There was one song he does a parody of Radioactive, which is brilliant, and I cannot believe he didn't make a video for that. Like, that was the one song where I was like, how did you skip this? Because I will say the 8 videos are brilliant, but some songs are better than others.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Lame Claim to Fame sounds like a deep cut to me.
Sure.
You know, and the video of the cutouts is cute, but it's not on the level of Tacky or Word Crimes. But right. I thought Inactive was. So it was interesting that he took that chance and goes, you know what, I'm gonna do my Pixies original song, and I'm gonna do the Lame Claim to Fame original song as videos.
Right. You know, I think that also gets into just what kind of style do you want to do in the video, and what can you really do with the form? Because as much as he's hitting the tone parodies, he's also really, you know, playing with the form of what these songs are about and the videos, and really taking things in a little bit different way. And if you can't get the, if Inactive is really going to be, I mean, how much video are you going to do of Inactive? I mean, guy sitting on a couch, it's great YouTube cut.
Yeah, although to be fair, I don't know what the video for Radioactive is. I've heard it on the radio. So it's possible there was something in that video that you could have riffed on, which is what he did with Tacky. Because, you know, because Tacky is basically just, they're just walking around in bad clothes, but it's mirroring what's happening in the Happy video.
Exactly. And, you know, with a fantastic cast in that.
Yeah, and that's where the Nerdist comes in, because those are all Nerdist favors. And that's the one with the most cameos, so that's the one that comes from the Nerdist.
Right.
Unless Foyle was going to have Will Ferrell in it.
Well, they got Patton Oswalt.
They did get Patton Oswalt, yeah.
And Foyle was one of those songs that I'm watching that video, I'm like, oh, this is kind of cool. I like what he's talking about with microbes and Foyle. And then all of a sudden it takes that left turn.
I love that left turn. I felt like he wrote that first verse and he's like, I don't have a second verse. And then he's like, well, what else is Foyle? Oh, conspiracy theories with tin hats. Let's just take that turn then.
Yeah. Or he had two full songs and couldn't decide which way to go. So he's like, let me just mess with people.
Yeah. I feel more to the fact that he got to the end of the first verse. He's like, yeah, everybody knows I write about food.
Yeah.
You know what? Let me throw them a curveball.
And write about lizard people and fake moon landing.
Yeah, I don't do that much.
Note the that much.
Yeah, he will. Yeah, it's amazing how he can just be this hidden gem. Right. I just heard like when I had it on Ren.
He's the only pop star still on the radio that was on the radio in 1983.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe you too. That's the only one I can think of. But, you know, but it's funny how, some of his parodies aren't huge hits.
Right.
When they were huge hits, I just heard his parody of Waterfalls, which I don't know if I've ever heard it, which was Phony Calls.
Right.
But it was one of those, it was like, there was about 6 months, like the winter of 91, where they would not stop playing fucking Waterfalls. And I'm like, how was this song not ubiquitous? But you never know how it's going to hit.
Exactly. And, you know, and he was kind of, I mean, he was still releasing albums from the late 90s through the early 2000s, but it just wasn't getting the attention on the media that he deserved and that he had gotten earlier in his career.
Yeah, I feel like it was Eat It Broken, and then he followed up Eat It with Jeopardy, which is still great.
On the episode of The Nerdist, or not The Nerdist, but At Midnight, yeah. One of my favorite moments was the first episode with Weird Al also featured Mike Furman. And right up at the beginning of the episode, Mike Furman and Chris Hardwick just start doing the monologue from I'm Lost on Jeopardy to Weird Al.
The Don Pardo?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, that really worked. I was listening to it again. But then it was Fat. And everybody was kind of like, okay, all your hits are going to be Michael Jackson songs.
Right.
And then so the rest of that album wasn't quite as big. And then he did Living with a Hernia, which didn't do as well. And then he was starting to go down. And then, but then Gang...
Amish Paradise.
Amish Paradise was gigantic.
you know,
gigantic.
And then the
episode Star Wars American Pie song.
Right.
That's when he shaved his mustache off. So it's like every 4 or 5 years, he just hits the zeitgeist just right.
Just right, exactly.
And that's fascinating to watch.
When people just suddenly rediscover Al.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what's great about it. Have you seen him
in concert?
I was right about to ask that. Haven't you? I have not, but I feel like you told me once that you did.
I have seen him in concert twice.
Oh my God! This is why I called you.
The first time, and there were two completely opposed experiences. The first time was at the Washington State Fair, out in the little town of Monroe, Washington, which of course I can never forget. And we were there, and we were sitting in bleachers, and that's where I bought my white and nerdy sweatshirt, which I later realized I can't just wear that out in public in most contexts.
So this was like 2006, the first time you saw him?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, so this is right around then. And it was a downpour. I mean, it was raining throughout the entire show, and so we are just sitting there in the bleachers getting soaked while Weird Al is running around on the stage doing all these costume changes. And you know, it was just outside, just that really raw experience. And then a few years later, a couple years later for the Alpocalypse Tour, we caught him at Benaroya Hall, which is where the symphony plays in Seattle. The centerpiece of classical music, where I had previously seen, the symphony playing versions of sci-fi music hosted by Will Riker. Jonathan Frakes hosting it and narrating.
Awesome, but it really, the way you said Will, I was waiting for Shatner. And then I was like, oh, Frakes? Okay.
Frakes was pretty darn awesome as
Frakes
well.
Is pretty darn awesome.
But then to go from sitting on bleachers in the pouring rain to sitting in this hall with these perfect acoustics and in chairs with like 3 inches of padding on them, and people are, dressed up, and it was just, an amazing thing. And he comes out there, and the thing about a Weird Al show is he doesn't just get up there and perform. He does costume changes the way a Madonna or a Miley Cyrus does costume changes, where every couple of songs he's just going in full costume. He comes out for Amish Paradise, he comes out in full Amish garb. For Fat, he comes out in the fat suit. For White and Nerdy, he rolls out on the frickin' Segway.
Speaking of White and Nerdy, this is a really weird little piece of trivia. But we were watching Weird Al videos on YouTube, and
sure,
we pull up White and Nerdy, and the two gangsters that pull up in the car and like and stare at him when he comes out and like, just make faces at him and leave, are Key and Peele.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I think at that point they were on Mad TV, but like, they didn't have their show at that point.
Right.
Yeah. So that's
awesome.
That makes it even cooler, doesn't it?
It really does.
I am obsessed with Key and Peele now. I love that show so much.
I just stumbled across it in a hotel room the other night, and I'm just watching it, and it's like, this is insane.
It's one of those shows where you run into it a bunch of times, and you go, hey, what's this? Oh, that was pretty good. And then in your head, you after like a month or so, you go, hey, everything I've seen of this show is good. Mm-hmm. And then you start watching it, and then you go, oh, everything they're doing is good. And then you're just like, well, I love this show because everything they do is good.
Exactly.
It's kind of how I got into like Always Sunny in Philadelphia. other than the costume changes, how is Al as a performer live?
He is an amazing performer live. He puts on an incredible, it's a concert because there's a band on stage and they're playing, but it's not a concert. It's a show. Mm-hmm. It is a full-on theatrical production, and it's big and everything. The first time I saw him, I thought it was just a really good show, but he didn't really do much. He didn't really interact, and it was pouring rain, and he was probably all wired up, so he's not going to run out into the audience in the pouring rain. That's just silly. But even though the Ben Arroyo show was a much bigger attendance, I mean, it was a more intimate show. I mean, he was out in the crowd. He was working the crowd, and at the same time, it was a tightly produced show. So everybody knew where they were going to be when there wasn't. It wasn't like improv-ing it or things like that. But I mean, it is a pure spectacle. And it is funny, and he mixes in new stuff and old favorites, and yeah, it's, you know, if you're a little bit of a Weird Al fan, go to a show.
So what's your favorite album? And where do you rank this new one?
This new one, I'm going to need to listen to it about 10 or 20 more times before I have a good ranking of it. I think my favorite Weird Al album is... you know, it's a tough choice because there are so many great cuts all over the place. But I'm going to probably go with Dare to be Stupid.
You know what? That's what I was going to say.
You know, it's a great album, and it hit, you know, there's that certain age where you listen to something and it just hits you and just sticks with you in a way that's just incredible. And, you know, I still sing lines from, you know, One More Minute, and Dare to be Stupid is still the best Devo song I've ever heard, better than many Devo songs. And
there's a cover of George of the Jungle on it.
George of the Jungle, exactly. Exactly. It's, I mean, it is just, you know, such a thing to have that whole experience there. And I mean, Like a Surgeon, you know, the nice traditional parody, which kicks it off, is just solid. And you know, when I hear the Madonna song now, I still hear it as first, you know, instead of Like a Virgin, I still hear, you know, Like a Surgeon cutting for the very first time.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, it's just impressive. I just love the fact that after all these years, I feel like. You know, we always talk about we're in this age where geeks rule and nerds rule. And I feel like Weird Al Yankovic is one of those really original nerds where he couldn't be anything but the nerdiest guy in the world. I mean, you picture him, he had the, you know, in the 80s when he had the Hawaiian shirt and the Jufro and the giant glasses and the little mustache.
let's not forget, this is a rock star whose primary instrument is the accordion.
Yeah. And the fact that he basically looked at the landscape at a time when the music industry is like, we don't know how to sell albums. And he's like, oh, the internet? I get it.
Yeah.
But you, speak of geekly things, mm-hmm. you also had an interesting week.
I sure did. I've been a longtime fan of the Seattle Geekly podcast. It was one of the first podcasts I actually subscribed to. You know, when I was just setting up and looking for great geek things to do in Seattle. And so I've been listening to them for a number of years. And, you know, they've done great things for me. They've introduced me to bands like Kirby Crackle and the Double Clicks, who I talk about. I think I've talked about the Double Clicks on every episode of Caffeinated Comics I've been on now.
You have. And I
it's
think
it's starting to get a little creepy.
you and off the air, you said, you know, you need to have on Caffeinated Comics the Double Clicks.
The Double Clicks. Exactly. I think they're playing in Chicago this spring, so maybe, or this fall. So maybe we can work on that.
Maybe you need to come to Chicago this fall.
there we go. But yeah, Seattle Geekly's introduced me to all these great bands, lots of great authors, and this week I had the pleasure of interviewing them and talking with Matt and Shannon about their experience in creating a podcast and get to bring that to Caffeinated Comics.
I would love to hear that. Would you record that?
I sure will.
And then bring it here?
I sure will.
And then it would start like now?
Like, I am in the brand new West Seattle studios.
Woo-hoo.
Of the Seattle Geekly podcast. You know,
high atop Seattle Geekly Tower here in West Seattle.
You know, dominating the geek airwaves for the Pacific Northwest. You know, Matt and Shannon, thank you for having me here.
Thank you for coming. And it's always kind of an interesting experience when somebody actually wants to talk to us rather than us talking to them.
Well, I mean, I've been a fan of the Seattle Geekly for a long time. You've introduced me to, you know, such great performers as, you know, Kirby Crackle, Marion Call, Death Star, on and on over the years. I mean, sometimes you got to wonder, just how do you get such great guests?
You go in without, you're not scared if someone says no.
Yeah.
You that's just go basic, in with that.
That's
yeah.
basically what we've come up with is that, you know, you ask.
It doesn't hurt to ask. If they say no, then it doesn't work. But if they say yes, then you go, oh my gosh.
Yes. And this was a lesson that actually, you mentioned Death Star. They were musical guests at NorwestCon, one of our local science fiction conventions. And they were talking to us about it. And apparently people were all like, oh my God, how did you get into NorwestCon? It's like, we asked.
Yeah.
So sometimes it's just as simple as that.
Yep.
You know, I think that's one of those lessons. The earlier you learn that in life, the better it goes, because that becomes the solution for, you know, dating,
yeah, mm-hmm.
finding friends, getting a job.
The worst thing they're going to say is no.
Yeah, starting a podcast, definitely.
Well, that's awesome. So, I mean, you've been doing this for years, and you know everybody knows you're big fans of all this stuff. So.
Oh, yeah, we're total geeks.
No, I'm just faking you.
I think the double clicks had something to say about that.
I've even got a shirt that says "Fake Geek Girl." So
you do. You're not wearing it today, though.
It's not very convincing.
Nice. So how did you get into geek culture?
Well, I kind of stem from the. I think we're all kind of the same age. Grew up in the
ballpark,
70s,
yeah.
early 80s.
Yeah, I spent 15 years at age 27 before moving on.
But
yeah,
okay.
Yeah. Right. Got my start in the 70s. Yeah.
Well, if we actually opened that closet right there, you'd be able to see. Some of how I started into geek culture, which was seeing Empire Strikes Back first. I was too young at the time to go see Star Wars.
In the theater.
Right. But my dad and my mom took us to Empire. And I had read the novelization of Empire Strikes Back before I went and saw it. Now that was, I'm like eight or nine at that point.
And that's a heavy one.
And actually there's more sex and violence in it. than the movie. It's really weird.
Was it you that ended up spoiling the whole thing for their elementary school class? Or was that somebody else?
Oh, I don't know. It might have been. Because I already knew the whole Darth Vader was Luke's father.
But oh, my anyway, God. Spoilers.
Oh, my God. No, but behind there is a Darth Vader and a C-3PO case of all of my
Star Wars figures.
That's awesome.
And I've got the Ewok Village and Jabba. And
strangely, when we were packing up to move to our new giant podcast tower here, I kept finding little Star Wars figure guns in various stashed.
Don't
various,
ask me.
And
which
she kept saying, "Don't throw those away."
You know, I think there were still Jawas buried under some blacktop in Queens.
Yeah.
So that was kind of I was always a big reader. I learned to read when I was like 3 or 4, really, really early.
Nerd.
So I read a lot, and then the Star Wars thing. I mean, who could pass that by in the early 80s?
At that, right. And I was much the same. I think I. Well, we were talking earlier before we started recording. My dad is actually a rocket scientist,
so that helps.
And my mom was is a librarian, so I was pretty much screwed right from the start.
Right.
So science and literature and reading, I grew up. My dad would watch Star Trek. And
your
this
mom
is original
has
series.
Lord of the Rings in German.
Yeah, and she was reading The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings to my siblings and I from well before I could even understand what was going on. I mean, certainly before I could read. So I was doomed. I never had a chance.
Yeah,
it was probably sometime before you even realized that this is not how everybody else lives.
It was kind of shocking to me when I got out into the world and realized that not everybody knew the whole story of the Battle of the Five Armies, and
I still don't. No spoilers.
going into preschool, and I wanted to, play the Hobbit. Instead of cops and robbers or cowboys and Indians, I was like, no, you be the goblins, and
see,
I'll be.
I had it great though, because I was like one of the only girls that played with the boys, because I thought girls were horrible, and so.
Well, there's that whole cooties thing.
I know, but we got to play Star Wars all the time. It's only Princess Leia. Guess who I got to be every single time?
Automatic starring role.
Yeah.
There you go.
Although I was a Barbie girl, so Han Solo would go on dates with Barbie, even though they were like 8 years
different. I was going to say, there's a little problem with scale there.
Not like Ken, so she had to end up with somebody else.
I think Han
Solo obviously has an appreciation for, you know, alternate body images in that respect, and it's all action figures.
But between the two, honestly, I think I would have to go with Han Solo over Ken too.
Yeah,
but
Ken's head kept falling off too, so I hated playing with that guy. I know.
That's rough.
So yeah, so that comes to an entirely different entirely different type of entertainment.
Yeah.
So you know, obviously with this being a part of your life, what inspired you to actually start the podcast?
I'll let Matt take this.
Yeah, this was, when was it, what year was it that this whole thing, all this nonsense got started?
2009,
yeah. Shannon came home from work one day, because she was at the time working in a job where she listened to a lot of podcasts, because...
For 8 hours, I could listen to whatever. Yeah,
for 8 hours, she listened to whatever. So she was just chewing through podcasts at a furious rate. And she came home and said, "Let's start a podcast." And me, not knowing and having any idea of what would be involved, I said, "Sure." And it was probably just as well that I didn't know what we were getting into, because if I'd had any conception of how much work it was actually going to be, I would have said, "You're crazy. This is never going to work."
I just, you know, I'd listened to the Kevin Smith podcast. I love Smodcast and all that. And... oh, who else? There's some gay podcasts I like to listen to.
500 After Midnight.
500
by Midnight.
By Midnight. A bunch of other ones. And
I don't
just
even know if they're still producing.
I don't know. Yeah. And there were just a bunch of people, and it's like, these are like friends. These are like my work buddies. I don't get to interact with them much, but I get to listen to them, and they're kind of like me. Like, this is so cool. Why can't, I mean, Matt and I have been together since 1989. Our first date was in 1989. And
Yeah.
But it was like, we're geeks. Let's talk about being geeky, you know? Because he's like, what should we do it about? I'm like, well, we're geeks. And he's like, well, what about geeks? I'm like, I don't know.
Everything.
I said, if it's a really big, wide arc, then we can cover a lot of different things. And we are. We're
I have
geeks.
To say, when we first started out, I was worried that we were going to run out of things to talk about. We haven't yet.
No, although, was it Sherry Priest or Marion Call that called us Renaissance
geeks? Yeah. So, yeah, we have a lot of material to cover, and fortunately, we haven't run out of things to talk about yet.
Right. Well, I mean, that's great. You're able to go into so many different genres, you know, and if there's a particular topic that doesn't appeal to somebody, odds are...
Except comics. Can't stand comics.
Also in that closet behind you. How many long boxes? Yeah.
8? 10? Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and that's one of the real interesting things about podcasting, too, is that unlike, I think, a lot of other forms of media, just the fact that you're listening on headphones, you've got people talking in direct... there's an intimacy about the format.
We're like the voices in your head.
except they were geeks.
except instead of telling you to go out and, you know, rampage naked and that you're actually Napoleon... We're telling you to go read some comics.
Yeah. Oh, I want to hear that episode.
That one didn't quite... I think that one got left on the cutting room.
People keep telling us we need to do a drunk one, and I'm like, you're not going to understand a word I say.
The Raid Warning podcast that we did.
Oh, yeah. I don't remember much of
that. Even if you're not a big World of Warcraft fan, we were guests on the Raid Warning podcast.
And they kept shoving beer down our throats.
Oh, man. They had some really good beer. And, yeah, it kind of got out of hand. But anyway... Yeah. Look that one up. I'm sure it's still available somewhere.
Well, you know, I mean, that's great. This one of the other real interesting things too is, you know, it's easy to do a podcast.
Right.
It's hard to do it well.
It's also hard to keep it up.
And consistency makes such a difference in so many different things that we do. The more you just do it every week, you get better.
Yeah. And that was the technological barriers to entry were low when we started, and they have only gotten less intimidating.
And less money.
You can do it with a USB microphone and open source software. Or you can end up spending as much money as you possibly want to on equipment.
Yeah.
But you can jump in, you know, the barriers to entry are very low.
But when we did start, we did say to ourselves, okay, we're going to do a podcast and let's do it. It's every week and we're going to do it for a year.
For at least a year and see what happens.
Because I think having also a goal with that is helpful.
Yeah, you know, and I think that's great. With any project, doing it regularly, I mean, it's about building an audience.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, when you talk about equipment and the gear, you know, obviously this is the very low entry. When you know, you took a break from Seattle Geekly,
right,
and then came back with a Kickstarter campaign, yeah, which was just really successful.
Surprise,
the response,
you know,
was amazing.
That was kind of, it was actually kind of funny, because when Shannon started talking about bringing back the podcast.
Well, can we just tell a little bit backstory why we brought it back?
Yeah.
It was 2011, May 2011. We ended the podcast. I was getting exhausted and getting sick all the time. And turns out February in 2012, we found out I had stage 3 colon cancer. So it was like, oh my.
So we had a few other things to concentrate on during that time.
Yeah, so I went through chemo for the rest of 2012, and last year around July or August, around this time of year, it was like, you know, I wonder if people really want us back, because if we do,
you know, we'd maintained the Twitter account,
yeah,
right, which was still, you know,
and the Gmail, yeah, email and all that stuff, but it was like, you know what, we never got too many like donations and things like that, so it's like, but if people want us back, we're going to need help, because our domain name had been taken.
Yeah, somebody, and that was my fault, really, because I had, you know.
Yeah, but what else were you going to think of when I was going through chemotherapy?
I was thinking, you know, who's going to want Seattle-Geekly.com? No, you know, I can let this lapse. We don't have to worry about it. Nobody's going to take it. Yeah, somebody took it.
Sure.
So we wanted at least $5,000 before,
yeah,
they'd even talk
for
to
a
us.
For a low, low starting bid, wow, of $5,000, we could start talking to them about getting the name back. So we're like, I'll tell you what, how about for the low, low price of like $20, we just register SeattleGeekly.net,
yes,
and move on from there.
But yeah, the Kickstarter, it was like, okay, if we had our dream set up, what would we need? And
you're looking at it right now.
It's a great setup.
Yep.
For those of you on the podcast, just look really closely into your headphones.
Yeah.
You'll be able to see.
I think it's called a 6-channel mixer by PV.
Yeah.
And we've got XLR microphones and stands and all that kind of thing. And
none of which you actually need to make a podcast,
no,
but it does help.
But it does. It's very cool, and it actually impresses a bunch of people when they come in front of it. So
it looks totally legit.
Yeah, it gives you that extra level of professionalism.
Right. But we also needed to get a P.O. box back for reviews, review books, and review materials. We had to...
And to keep those Seattle Geekly stalkers at bay.
Yeah,
exactly.
Right. That, it's a constant problem. The stalkers, terrible.
But then, you know, printing business cards with all the new domain name, because,
yes,
the old ones,
because the old ones didn't work. And
you,
I suppose,
know,
we,
right,
could have just gone through with a Sharpie and... But getting back to that whole professionalism,
right,
thing.
We had a logo donated, and it was just like, let's... You know, everybody keeps saying that it sounds professional. Let's get a little bit closer to that.
Right.
Let's actually, you know, put some effort into being a little more professional.
Yeah, we asked for $3,000.
Yeah.
We also had someone go through and take all of our old podcast, or all of the old archives, and put it into the new website, so you can go back as far as the first episode on our new website.
Which I don't really recommend, but...
I think that one was rambling about zombies or something.
No, that was the... Anyway.
Well, I think going back and looking at that for... Anytime you're a big fan of a podcast, go back and listen to the first couple,
yeah,
of episodes, because the difference is also striking. So if you're ever thinking, you know, I don't know if I can do this, I don't know, you know, if I'm never going to be as good as they are, you know, whatever the topic, go back and listen to it and see how people come.
I suppose,
see how people,
yeah,
develop and grow.
I suppose that is it would be a good inspiration, because, yeah, I don't know if episode 0 is still up. The one that
should
we did
be
as a test.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To see if everything was
that
horrible.
One, yeah, that one didn't.
Although I think we had fevers during the zombie ones.
Yeah.
So.
Plus, it'll be important when people are writing their PhDs on the history of the Seattle Geekly.
Yes.
Right. Yeah, because that's going to happen.
We don't have a Wikipedia page.
Ooh, we totally need a Wikipedia page.
I know.
Okay, Caffeinated Comics audience, get on that. Let's get a Wikipedia page going for the Seattle Geekly podcast.
And it'll be up for about 15 minutes before they say, not notable enough to justify a... I mean, shoot, I don't know, maybe she does now.
What?
Molly Lewis?
Molly Lewis,
yeah.
Yeah.
I think she actually has one.
Does
now.
She not, does she actually have one again?
Well, she
now?
Deserves to have one.
Well, yeah, but she had one, and then they took it down because she wasn't notable enough, and she actually wrote a song about it. So
that's right,
yeah.
She did.
It's a good song, too.
So I mean, obviously the Kickstarter was great. You've got and Kickstarter is really, you know, empowering people to do a lot of things they couldn't before.
And, yeah.
And believe me, no one was more surprised than me when that Kickstarter got funded.
Well, no, because, I mean, I had been a patron of Kickstarter through my chemo. Because, like, I'm sitting in my chair. I'm going to sit and look at Kickstarter stuff.
And boy, did we get a lot of board games.
Yeah,
holy smokes.
But the thing is every time you look under podcast, it would be, you know, some guy's podcast, he needs $1,200. And
they would sweep
$5.
Their circle of immediate friends and family and then just stall out.
Right.
Yeah. So I was like, God, $3,000 is going to be a lot of money to ask for. But it's like, well, we'll see.
Back to that first lesson of
just ask. And, you know, we made T-shirts like the one Matt is wearing.
I don't know. Is this too meta? I'm wearing a Seattle Geekly T-shirt. Is this like being in a band and wearing your own band's T-shirt?
Probably.
Only if you had the pin attached to the T-shirt.
Oh, that's true. The sticker on your head.
I'm safe then.
But no, Kickstarter is really cool. You just need to know how it works as to how much you can ask for. So if you have a podcast you want to bring back or you want to start, you can't ask for $3,000. We didn't think we were going to make
it. Yeah, I thought the $3,000 was high enough. But I didn't think it was going to get funded, honestly.
Right.
And it did. So it was humbling and flattering and terrifying.
Well, because I couldn't go back to my other job that I had before the cancer treatment.
Right.
So it was like, all right, for 48 episodes, that would be considered a year again. I will run the podcast. I'll do everything on the web. I'll do everything. He's just a voice on the podcast.
I am a talentless hanger-on at this point, which I tell you, if you have to be in a podcast, this is the position to be in right here. The one where you just sort of show up and blather into a microphone for 90 minutes plus or minus, and then somebody else does all the work. Fantastic.
Yeah.
There's the plan. Yeah, you know, and Kickstarter is such a powerful tool today. It's really sort of the outgrowth of what we've seen with, you know, a lot of the other social media tools that have just grown up over the last 10 years. And Shannon, I know when you were going through through your cancer treatment, mm-hmm. you were very open about that on social media. And how did you use social media there, and how did it help you?
Well, the main – this is actually – I hope I don't cry. I got the domain ihavecancerinmybutt.com.
Which was a lot of fun, because when I was setting that up, I was having some sort of technical difficulty. I can't even remember what. And I called the tech support for our web host.
Oh, gosh.
And had to have this very serious conversation with him about, well, okay, go to the directory ihavecancerinmybutt.com/whatever and try this. Okay, now try going to ihavecancerinmybutt.com/this. And it's like,
all right. Oh, like we came up with that idea like the second day after I'd been diagnosed, just because I have a bunch of family in this area and some in California and stuff. And it was like,
and you weren't active on Facebook at the time either.
And I wasn't active on Facebook, so it's like I need to have a blog site to say how things, what I'm going through, because not only does it help you when you're putting those kind of feelings out there, you're finally like going, yes, I'm acknowledging them. But it's also always kind of like, okay, aunts, my three aunts, please don't call me every day to find out how I'm doing.
Aunts, cousins.
Right. Multiple, yeah.
Yeah.
So it was like, here you can track, you know, maybe once a week, maybe every 2 weeks, you can call me or email me or something. But here's what's going on. I actually was kind of inspired by author Jay Lake, who unfortunately just passed away from colon cancer.
Recently, yeah.
Yeah, recently. But his blog kind of kept me going through cancer, because he had already gone through it and it came back. So he was being, you know, he was being very vocal about it. And, you know, it's obviously a taboo subject to talk about your butt.
And butt cancer.
I know. So, and yeah, it was colorectal cancer. The you know, the
breast cancer's pink, colorectal cancer is brown
or blue. I'm kind of going with blue, but anyway, you know,
I'm sure they did that on purpose.
through Twitter, which we had, I wasn't really using the Seattle Geekly tag for that. I had my own Ask a Geek Gal, but between that and putting blog posts up, I actually did inspire someone who was having kind of the same kind of problems. Go in and get a colonoscopy, because I was only 39 when I was diagnosed.
Right.
You don't go get your colonoscopy until you're 50. So someone who was a fan of the podcast went and got a colonoscopy, and unfortunately found out he had stage 4 colon cancer. Ooh. And he actually died.
He just passed away recently, too.
A month or
so. So the lesson of all of this...
Yeah,
don't get colon cancer.
Yeah, it was a really powerful story.
Yeah. And, but it was a way to... here's what I'm feeling, instead of, you know, going over the same story every day with someone else calling. And also, chemo does crap to your head too. Like, I'm still having memory problems, but, you know, social media is so good with that. Obviously it touched a few people,
right?
You know,
and right. In a broader context as well, just not only being any sort of niche interest group, and, you know, being a cancer survivor is, I would hardly necessarily characterize as being an interest group.
Well, a young colon cancer is, yeah.
But
yeah.
It's
definitely not a boring group.
For us, of a certain age,
yeah.
Growing up in the geek community, finding other geeks, finding people who shared our interest, man, it was hard. You know, especially, and, you know, growing up in a small community somewhere, it must have been a nightmare.
Yeah, if your little town doesn't have a comic or game store, I mean,
you're boned. And yeah. Now there's social media, man. There's Google groups, there's Facebook groups, there's Twitter. You know, you can connect.
Instagram, all that
you
stuff.
Can connect with people in a way that was completely impossible 30 years ago.
Yeah. And yeah, that's the other thing is if you start a podcast or whatever, you definitely want to have your fingers in every social media that you can.
Do you still do Facebook?
Yes.
Okay.
My mom is not following me. I told her she can't follow me.
See, it's I do Google, Google Plus. The best thing about Google Plus is that everybody you know is on Facebook.
I just told my mom, she goes, I'm going to follow you. I'm like, it's going to be everything about podcast. Oh, okay. And I'm like, well, I'm just really, you know.
Just don't even bother.
You know, and at the very least, even the ones you're not active in, if you're going to start something, at least get your name and register in every new thing. Even if you don't,
Actually, Will Wheaton just ran into this. Apparently, there's a Will Wheaton on Instagram that's not him.
Uh-oh.
And he tried to get Instagram to take it down, and apparently he didn't want to jump through all of the hoops that they wanted him to jump through, so he's just basically going with it. But there's a lesson here for all of us. If you're Will Wheaton famous, get those names nailed down.
Exactly.
Which is why we don't have to worry about it.
Exactly. You know, I try to do that too. Just, or even if you just have one of those names, like if you look up Bill Monroe in the phone book, for those old people who still have phone books,
you're going to still do phone books.
There was what we just moved into this place like a month and a half ago, and I freaking had phone books. They delivered it to it, and I'm like, okay, one step to the recycler. There you go.
There's a lesson here for all of us.
So what other, you know, advice would you have for anybody who's starting up, like the Sacramento Geekly or the Billings Geekly or Boise Geekly or
which, by the way, I entirely encourage people. You know, somebody was talking about doing like a Portland Geekly. Portland has
the Double Clicks. We were talking to them, and they wanted to do. They're doing a NPR thing or something every other week, and they were like, hey, could we call it Portland Geekly? And I was like, go ahead,
yeah, do it.
They changed their mind or whatever, but right.
But yeah, if you're in, you know, Boise and want to do Boise Geekly, just do it. we are not doing anything that anybody else couldn't do at least as well.
The only thing is, even after the Kickstarter story, please be aware that if you think you're going to be a podcaster and get money or get famous out of this,
there's a really easy way to become rich and famous with a podcast.
Yeah.
That's to be rich and famous and then start a podcast.
Like Kevin Smith.
Like Kevin Smith, exactly.
I mean, every once in a while you'll get that, was it Night Vale something or other? The Welcome to Night Vale.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Course, I'm not working anymore. I'm not listening to podcasts. But every once in a while there's something like that. But don't go into this thinking you're going to be rich and famous.
Yeah, don't go into it thinking, you know, I'm going to be the next Felicia Day. I'm going to be the next Will Wheaton.
This helps Matt. If you're kind of shy, I mean, you can still do podcasts by yourself or whatever, but just pretend no one's listening.
Yeah, this is one of the things that it always is a little jarring to me when somebody wants to come and interview us in a situation like this. The only way I get through our podcast is by pretending nobody's listening. I just, you know.
And then when the people stop at us and look and go, are you Matt and Shannon from Seattle Geekly? Because they recognized our voices.
Why do you ask?
Yes, it's a little confusing.
Those of us who grew up geeky, a lot of us tend to be kind of introverted, maybe socially awkward, perhaps, if you want to buy into the whole stereotype thing. Right. It's easy to talk to a microphone.
Yeah, but also I think more successful podcasts have at least two people talking. on a regular basis, it gets kind of monotonous if you're only listening to one person. And that's just being a podcast.
I know, I'm sure it gets
listener.
Kind of monotonous just listening to us blather on for hours and hours. But
yeah, have a specific goal. You know, say, okay, we're going to try this for 6 months or whatever. We're going to do it this many days. I mean, some other podcasts do it every 2 weeks or every 10 days, and they're successful at doing that too. Just yeah. have certain goals that you're going to do with yourself.
Because, be predictable. That's yeah, the
be predictable, because the pod fading happens everywhere. There's been so many podcasts that go to like episode 5, and that was 2 years ago. Yeah, you can still right. get them on iTunes. Just make sure you have some sort of goal that you want to
and if you're
to.
Going to go on hiatus, as we did,
yes,
make sure you publicize that, because otherwise people will think, oh, they haven't put out an episode for a while, I guess they're done.
Yeah, right. No.
Moving on.
So it's about executing deliberately something you're passionate about.
Yeah.
Yes, and that's the other
if
thing.
If you love corn in the cob.
If you can make a weekly podcast out of corn in the cob, more power to
yeah.
you.
And you know, with the fandom that like the farm reports have and the excitement yeah. about what's happening with the price per bushel and
well,
the weather. You could make a podcast okay. about corn in the cob.
The farm simulator games I know are huge, especially over in Europe.
The only ones that I'm really worried about are all the people that had Breaking Bad podcasts that now have nothing to talk about.
Yeah, I don't know where you go with that.
Yeah, but having it into some sort of, you know, popular culture thing, and then either it gets canceled or... you know, ends.
Like right. the
unless you're going to transition to This Week in Methamphetamines.
Exactly.
Not recommended.
Meth in New Mexico. Yeah.
The Will Wheaton MC Frontalot sketch on whichever album it's on. Oh. You know, I'm going to stop you right there. No one is going to want to listen to that.
Oh, really?
Oh, I see what you did there.
Yeah. So, nerdcore, you like...
Hey, you know, there's
orchestras.
there's a niche that needs to be filled. I'm sure that somebody's already jumped in, but Z stopped doing Radio
Hipster,
Free Hipster, which I miss terribly. Hipster Please remains one of my favorite people on Twitter and in the world of nerd music, and he just got too busy. He's not doing Radio Free Hipster anymore. Yeah. So if you want to start a podcast and you're into nerd music, there's a niche that needs to be filled. Email us. I'll listen to it.
Yeah, you know, and that's great. I mean, you know, that's the cool thing. With the internet, these things can pop up anywhere. But this popped up in Seattle, you know, and we see a lot of, especially that of the Pacific Northwest, mm-hmm. you know, mentioned, you know, the Double Clicks before, yeah. Frontalot, Death, or Kirby Crackle, all these, you know, performers that come out of Seattle. What is it that makes Seattle and the Pacific Northwest such geek-friendly space?
I think it's the weather.
Yeah, although MC Frontalot is from New York.
But he started out in California.
California.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. That's true. Sorry. I guess I should say I learned about him here, so I just associate him now with Seattle. But yeah.
Yeah, I think it is something to do with how crappy our weather is. No, because you sit inside. Plus, there's video game companies, you know, and Microsoft and Amazon.
And
it's all
Bungie
geeky.
And Valve. And, exactly. You know, this is something that I've actually speculated about previously, and I have not come up with a good answer. It does seem like we have a disproportionate number of working authors and, you know, software startups. And I think it's
the weather. I really do.
I don't know why.
Yeah, but do you know of any geeks like in, I don't know, Orlando, Florida?
Well, I don't know anybody in Orlando, Florida. So
it's hard to believe there is an Orlando, Florida outside the complex. Yeah. You know?
No, I really think it's just, you know, people are forced inside for various reasons, and they read or play a game or play a video game or whatever.
Yeah. And who was it that we were talking to that was all mad because we were getting the Seattle Northwest area was, you know, sort of an epicenter for nerdcore music, and they said we already had grunge, we can't have another.
Oh, there's Subzilla.
Yeah.
Subzilla.
We can't have another. We've shot our musical genre.
Yeah.
We can't have another one. It's not fair.
Well, we already gave the world you know, Hendrix and Heart and
Nirvana,
you know, Sir Mix-a-Lot and
yeah. Yeah, but why I don't know. It's weird. It's something in the air, it's the weather, it's just the
they really think it's the weather, cuz we have the highest suicide rate too.
I'm just saying. And that weather probably also is why we have such, you know, such great coffee and such great pho.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
I want noodles.
There's a fuzz right down the street.
Anyway, yeah. So, I've speculated about this. I have not come up with a satisfactory answer.
Yeah. Okay. So we'd love to hear what anybody has to think about that.
Yeah. Once again,
so,
email us.
Absolutely. So, well, so looking at all this, and you get previews from a lot of things, you listen to a lot of things, you consume a ton of culture for a ton of geek culture for work, and that is an awesome excuse. You know, is there anybody who out there should we be reading or should we be listening to that we probably don't already, that we probably haven't heard about yet?
Oh, gosh.
Well, in terms of podcasts, I always have to give a shout out to Bone Bat.
Mm-hmm. Stephen Gord.
Stephen Gord. They've been doing this longer than we have. They do every 3 weeks, I think, every four weeks.
Two or three weeks.
And
they
end up covering a lot of geeky stuff, but they are really just independent music, pop culture. They run the Bone Bat Comedy of Horrors Film Festival. Mm-hmm.
Which also was on Kickstarter and was successful.
Yes. And they, like the audience here, I think, are very... they earn their explicit tag.
Yeah.
It's not safe for work or kids or... delicate sensibilities.
You will laugh during their podcast, and then you'll get in trouble at work.
Stephen Gord, and they've, I don't know, again, I don't know how they do it. They track down stuff that I've not run across, and they're always a pleasure to listen to. But let's see, reading and video gaming, and
we talked of all of our favorite ones.
You certainly hit all of the musical biggies that.
Well, Molly Lewis is from Mercer Island here in Seattle, and a lot of people don't necessarily know her name.
Yeah, she's shown up with Pollen Storm and
Jonathan Colton
a few times.
Yeah, Tribe One.
Yes, Tribe One, who has done a lot of collaborations with Adam Warrock.
I'll just listen to him talk.
Yeah,
it's awesome.
Malibu Shark Attack is his current
other band. His,
well, he's got two or three other.
Yeah,
he's he, like Kyle Stevens from Kirby Crackle, is a serial bandogamist.
But yeah, Tribe One. He's such a geek, and he's a geek of color, and it's just
and he's
so
another
cool.
one of those ones that you
he's
just
very...
listen to him, and it's like, why is this guy not playing sold out arenas?
Yeah,
he is
like,
so
he's
talented.
So talented, yeah.
Let's see. Who else have I, you know, since they're out on tour now with Frontalot, Dr. Awkward is touring with Frontalot as we speak, or will be
something.
Soon anyway.
Yeah.
So he's, and boy, there's just so much geek music.
Just go back and look at our show notes.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
And that's going to be at seattlegeekly.net.
It is.
Seattlegeekly.net. We're also available on iTunes, at seattlegeekly on Twitter, seattlegeekly@gmail.com. What's the Facebook? Is it just you?
/ Shannon Flowers, which is my name. Or you can find all those off of our seattlegeekly.net. There's a lot to buttons you can push.
And push them buttons.
Exactly. Great. Well, thank you so much for your time today.
Oh, thank you.
This has been awesome. It's great hearing more from you. And you know, everybody out there, after you finish this latest episode of Caffeinated Comics, go ahead and check out the Seattle Geekly.
Sorry you're so hot in Chicago. Move to Seattle.
It's much cooler here.
We have cupcakes.
As always, you can follow me at Not On My Book. That is the Twitter feed for Caffeinated Comics. Like our Facebook page. That's where most of the news happens in between our episodes. And visit Chimera Comics and see Steven at 19 South LaGrange Road in LaGrange, Illinois. Talk to you next week.
Caffeinated Comics is a Not On My Book production.
Take that, meatball!